This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Recently, a close friend of mine experienced an unexpected loss. Watching their family struggle emotionally and financially made me stop and think seriously about my own family's future. As the primary provider, I know how important it is to make sure that if anything ever happened to me, my family would still be able to manage. So I realized that without life insurance, my family would be left with overwhelming financial burdens. I looked into coverage before, but the process always felt complicated, got endless forms, phone calls, and medical exams, made everything take weeks. So that's why Ethos stood out to me. Their process is simple and 100% online. There's no medical exam required, just a few health questions, and you get a quote in as little as 10 minutes. In many cases, you can even receive same-day coverage without ever leaving your house. Ethos offers up to $3 million in coverage, with some policies starting as low as $2 a day, billed monthly. It's a trustworthy company that's changing the way people think about life insurance. So protect your family's financial future with life insurance from Ethos. Get your free quote at ethos.com/Brian. That's ethos.com/Brian. Application times may vary. Rates may vary.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show, and I'm here right in Midtown Manhattan, but heard around the country, around the world. Rich Lowry is going to be with us, the editor of the National Review, and Brett Baer standing by, fresh off doing half a show at the White House yesterday and having a chance to talk to the Treasury Secretary. There's so much action in and around the White House. And of course, the same Brett Baer, author of American Spirit, To Rescue the American Spirit, Teddy Roosevelt and the Birth of a Superpower, which now in the top, it's up among the top bestsellers in the country. Before we get to Brett, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
When's the day going to come that the FBI is going to level with us and just make everything public? I mean, listen, Crooks is dead. You're not going to prosecute him. Let's see every piece of information.
That is Josh Hawley, obviously the former attorney general in Missouri, knows the law. Thomas Crooks, theories, conspiracies, fairy tales. What's the truth and what's truly an attempt to go for clicks over facts?
Number two.
Today and tomorrow we're going to announce that we are going to increase that that $600 billion to almost $1 trillion of investment, real investment and real opportunity by details in many areas.
Now you're saying to me now that the $600 billion will be $1 trillion.
Definitely.
Wow. That's pretty big news, right? MBS visit showing Trump has done the impossible, being the most popular American president in Israel and the Middle East at the same time, with the economic power of Saudi Arabia and now clearly on our side. Could it all build towards peace in Gaza and an expansion of the Abraham Accords? We'll ask Brett.
Number one.
Do you recall that email being sent to Jeffrey Epstein from that team?
Yeah, of course, I have no recollection of the email. I've never had a conversation with him, never met him.
So you never got a donation from Jeffrey Epstein or anything like that?
Certainly not.
Really? Okay. Because there was an invitation to Brooklyn Obama, and it was Hakeem Jeffries in 2013. To Jeffrey Epstein to appear at a fundraiser for him. You got what you wanted, Democrats. Now you should start fearing what you got, as all Epstein files are about to be released by President Trump. Already caught in the crossfire, CEOs, Harvard presidents, drumroll please, Hakeem Jeffries, let alone a delegate from the Virgin Islands. All unintentional fallout problems. Brett Baer joins us now. Hey, Brett, this has been the sideshow. Jeffrey Epstein, we have nothing else going on in the world. We've got to find out about Jeffrey Epstein, who hung himself years ago. But now the Democrats got what they wanted. Do you think the president signs for the release today, tomorrow, next day?
I think he does. I don't know if it's today. I think he does sign it. I mean, he said he was going to. And I think if he didn't, it would be a big story, and he would create another furor after doing you know, the 180 that he did. And so I think he signs it. And you're right. I mean, it may be the dog that caught the car. You know, for Democrats who've been pushing for this, you're already seeing the fallout for Larry Summers, who dropped off of OpenAI board, I think, today, and he's pulling back from public life. I think there's, you know, a number of people on that list who are probably sweating. I don't, you know, it doesn't seem like President Trump is one of them, but we will, you know, over time see. I think, you know, for all the focus on it, Britt Hume said it the other night on my show. He thinks that this feels like the Russia stuff to him, you know, like it doesn't develop what everybody thinks it's going to develop to. And maybe that's what we look at, but we won't know until we see what we see.
It does, because what happens is they say when they do an investigation, that Mueller report comes out, you will see the links with Russia, and it didn't. And then when they say, wow, when Michael Cohen testifies, oh, he saw everything. He was the Trump's lawyer. He was the henchman. You look out. He's going to open up. Nothing happened. And we know that court decision looks like it's en route to being reversed when he was convicted on those ridiculous charges. So go ahead.
And in the meantime, like, as the focus is on this and all this oxygen in the media universe, yeah, especially here in Washington, D.C., you know, things are happening. I've talked to you about before that we often focus on the iceberg that's above the water. But in the Trump administration one and two, there's a massive iceberg below the water that is happening. One of the things that's happening is, you know, what happened yesterday with the Saudis. That's massive as far as the relationship between the two. And you're right to point out that what president has managed to be the most popular president in Israel and the most popular president in the Middle East at the same time? There hasn't been one.
Yeah, I talked to Naftali Bennett, the former and maybe future prime minister, last week. And I can't remember if it was on or off the radio, but he just said to me, I've never seen anything like it about Trump's popularity. He says it's about 88%. But yet I have never met anyone who doesn't love Trump. And I said, really? And I go, do you realize he's also popular in the Middle East? He goes, I know. And he's just shaking his head. He goes, I know, but we can't thank him enough. On the Epstein thing, this Plaskett, this Stacey Plaskett getting text messages in real time during the hearing with Michael Cohen right there, not knowing who Rona Graff was, the longtime assistant to Trump when he was in the private sector, thought it was an acronym. That is just the beginning. I mean, Hakeem Jeffries got some explaining to do. Do you see how much money he gave to Democratic causes? And you know, Bill Gates is all over this thing. So when that comes out, what's he going to end up resigning from? It's like, did anyone pre-think this? I watched Virginia Joffre on camera say that President Trump is a friend of my dad's. He hired my dad, and then I got hired. You know, we really love. You know, we love Donald Trump. And sadly, she took her own life. Her book is a bestseller, as you know, the only book I think ahead of yours, because of the horrific thing she had to deal with when she got lured into Jeffrey Epstein's lair. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, you got this. You got the distraction. And with the, I want you to hear what Mike Johnson said yesterday. Cut three.
Any reaction to Leader Thune seeing the bill without adding amendments or changing it?
I'm deeply disappointed in this outcome. I think I've been at the state dinner. I don't know. I was just told that Chuck Schumer rushed it to the floor and put it out there preemptively. It needed amendments. I just spoke to the president about that. We'll see what happens.
So is he? Do you think he may veto it? You say you spoke to the president.
I'm not saying that.
Is he supportive of it in its current form?
We both have concerns about it.
So about the way it comes out, the way investigations are done, some people that are mentioned there. I mean, this guy had philanthropic causes. There might be some schools and things that he did that benefited people. But all of a sudden, that person is in the files and they're going to be in the middle of this maelstrom.
Yeah. And this is, you know, it's, you know, an elephant gun when it gets shot out. There's a lot of different things that go different ways. And sometimes, excuse me, there are tangential effects. And I think that that's what that concern is. Now, I don't think it's setting up for a veto based on that, but
no.
I could be wrong, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there are going to be some limitations, and this thing will live more. Believe me, Brett, you did the same thing. This is the last thing I want to talk about, because he's dead. I mean, there's so many legitimate issues to debate, affordability in Saudi Arabia, so let's do it. So the F-35s that are going to go to Saudi Arabia, that seems to be a done deal. What do you think we get back, besides the trillion in investment, which is unbelievable? But where is this going? Is this going towards signing on to the Abraham Accords?
100%. I think this is a path. I don't think they can say it. I think there's a implicit hat tip, like you're going, you got the UN vote on Gaza, which was a big, big deal for Mike Waltz at the UN. And obviously Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff worked on that as well. But that set the blueprint, and I think yesterday set the next step, and the relationship with Saudi could not, from what I've perceived, could not have been closer. And so, you know, the F-35s, there was always concern about sharing that technology, and does China get its hands on it? Israel, you know, how does it affect the balance in the Middle East? Everybody's signed on. You know, first of all, when we give those or sell those planes to others, it's a different version than we have. I think that they've said that the Saudis have been at our back always through the Iran strike, through thick and thin. They've always had the U.S. back, and this was a kind of an acknowledgement of that. And strengthened the relationship is something the Saudis really wanted for a long time.
So, I mean, but then we'll see, we're going to see in a real-life investment conference today. Elon Musk was one of the people at that dinner. What does that tell you? Number one, he made the trip anyway to Saudi Arabia when the president was there. But you got the head of Oracle and others that are there. Cristiano Ronaldo was there. So that what's the investors conference going to be like today?
I think it's going to be kind of the signing of all of these deals, specifically with companies. You know, Jensen Huang with NVIDIA is doing a big chip deal with Saudi. And I think you'll see where some of this $1 trillion is going to be deployed right away. And, I asked the Treasury Secretary about that, and, you know, he kind of laid it out about the money coming in, which I think people don't fully get their head around, about how much investment is coming in to the country real time.
Here it is. Here's some of your conversation. Cut 25.
It was the president at his best, working for the American people, always looking for more for them. And it was a big day here today.
What does that look like? I mean, it sounds great, $600 billion to $1 trillion, but how does that roll out? What does it actually look like?
Well, Britt, think about it. If you are another country in the world, what do you look to the U.S. for? What are the sources of American power? And that's what we saw on display here today. First, there's the military. So Saudis are going to be buying F-35s, coveted by everyone around the world, proof that they are a valuable ally.
And they've got non-NATO allied status too, correct?
It's a big deal, a really big deal for them, you know, like to get that status. They've wanted it for a long, long time. And it eluded them in multiple administrations for one reason or another. And this is a big acknowledgement. So, listen, I don't think that the relationship between MBS and President Trump could be stronger. And I think and that is a crucial thing in the blueprint that they have, the Trump administration has, for the Middle East.
So we know, too, that the administration's calculus was, let's make sure the Houthis are no longer on the terror list and make sure the pariah nation is Saudi Arabia. That was what they that was a policy decision, which was backwards because they're coming off Khashoggi 2 years prior, his murder, and all the investigations surrounding it. So here we are years later, and the president's just going to be looking to fortify this deal. But the one thing I always bring back, I aired it without giving you any money, and I apologize, your stand-up in Saudi Arabia when you went back. And what you saw about the transformation, that it's like a mix of Las Vegas and New York. Can you describe for our audience what it is like in Riyadh these days?
Yeah, they are investing a ton of money in trying to make the place very tourist-friendly. I'm not saying it is Vegas and New York. I'm saying that they are putting in just tons and tons of money to try to transition their economy off of oil to other avenues, and one of them being tourism. And I've just, you know, the changes that the Crown Prince has made are real. You know, they're not small. They're big transitions for their society. So just seeing it firsthand, you know, going around, I'd been there many years ago, and then going back was, you know, eye opening.
So you had a chance to tour around with your book to rescue the American spirit, Teddy Roosevelt and the birth of a superpower. How has it been received when you start talking about it in front of people, various events? You're at the Reagan Library, the Nixon Library. What's it been like bringing up the memory of this man and his impact?
Well, you know how history is great to talk about because people, I think, appreciate it. There are a certain group of people that are really into reading about history. But then there's a whole different group that just finds it and just enjoys reading it because it's interesting to read. So when you talk about it in these different groups and around the country, I think there's something that feels good about it because you're talking about our past, and I know you do this too. It's interesting to read. They're interesting characters. They're great stories, but it is who we are as Americans, and I think there are people that appreciate that.
Especially the whole rah-rah America as we come up on year 250. I was in North Dakota over the weekend, and they're talking a lot about that library. It's going to open up July 1st, and I think ready to go July. The president's going to be there July 1st, I think, and I think they're going to open up formally July 4th. There'll be another presidential library, which will be a huge tourist attraction, Brett.
It'll be massive, and it looks beautiful. I've seen the schematics. I'm going to plan to go out there next year and take the show there. But I think, it's a big coup for North Dakota, the former governor, now Secretary of Interior, Burgum, who is a major Teddy Roosevelt fan. I'll say geek. He loves everything TR, and he's a big reason that library is there.
Yep, to rescue the American spirit, Teddy Roosevelt and the birth of a superpower. Brett, great talking to you. Good luck tonight on Special Report.
All right, we'll see you.
Back in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Every day, America's first responders stand ready. Firefighters, law enforcement, paramedics, doctors, dispatchers, and people who put themselves on the line for public safety. But keeping them connected in moments of crisis has not been easy. That's why Congress authorized a nationwide network for public safety. Today, that promise is fulfilled through FirstNet. It's the only nationwide network built with and for first responders. So whether it's a big city, rural town, or remote tribal community, FirstNet helps ensure no call for help goes unanswered. It gives first responders priority access, never throttles their communications in the U.S., helping them to connect across agencies when it matters most. This isn't just a network. It's a lifeline, a bipartisan commitment to America's public safety, built to serve those who serve us all. FirstNet is the backbone of our nation's emergency response and will continue to be in the future. FirstNet, built with AT&T. Learn more on firstnet.com/public safety first.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
These latest revelations follow a pattern, which is that pretty much everything we learn is from a whistleblower. I mean, these latest pieces of information are from another whistleblower, and I want to salute all those patriotic whistleblowers once again. I've worked with many of them. But, Jesse, when's the day going to come that the FBI is going to level with us and just make everything public? I mean, listen, Crooks is dead. You're not going to prosecute him. Let's see every piece of information.
And that is Senator Josh Hawley talking about Crooks and the revelations about his footprint and what he was up to. One thing that I've got confirmed, that the FBI was not looking at for him, looking at him prior to him becoming an assassin. What Crooks left online, per Miranda Devine, identified as they, them, right? Very similar to Robinson, who killed Charlie. Trail of violent extremist posts. Also, the guy goes to furry conventions. Also same as Robinson, expressed admiration for mass violence and spoke openly of political assassinations. I'm not sure what Robinson's footprint is. Shifting from pro-Trump to anti-Trump, we know that for sure. The other thing that I understand is they found out that some of these posts, when people read them, they would tag the FBI. So if the FBI is being tagged on this and seeing this, how could they not have someone in cyber be able to pick up on this? That's what we're looking at. So I want to see what the president thinks about this. I can't. The FBI heads are going to be coming forward, I think, on Thursday, maybe today, with their pushback. How much is a fairy tale? How much are facts, but put it together to a conspiracy that doesn't exist? This is a lone gunman. Did you think that Squeaky Fromm, who tried to kill President Trump, Ford, was acting with others? Wasn't. Hinckley, was he acting with others when he shot Reagan? No, he wasn't. People are still up in the air about Oswald. We can still debate that forever. But the best thing to do is just to tell us, some people with a podcast looking for clicks. Is that all they're looking for? I can come up with a conspiracy theory that makes it seem as though Donald Trump was being set up and the FBI is ignoring it. Is that the true story, or is that the story being trumped up? Rich Lowry next. What if your home security could stop a break-in before it even begins? That's not science fiction. That's Simply Safe. And right now, their early access Black Friday sale is changing how we think about protection. Traditional systems wait until someone's already breaking in. Simply Safe's Active Guard outdoor protection, powered by AI, detects threats before they reach your door. Real security agents jump in instantly, confronting intruders, letting them know they are on camera and the police are on their way. And if needed, sending off sirens and spotlights. It's proactive protection that stops crime before it happens. And here's the best part. No long-term contracts, no hidden fees, and you can cancel anytime. It's been named Best Home Security System by U.S. News & World Report for 5 years straight. And with a 60-day money-back guarantee, you can try completely risk-free. So, if home safety's been on your mind, this is your moment. Right now, my listeners can take advantage of their biggest sale of the year with this exclusive early access to Simply Safe's Black Friday sale. And save 60% on any new system by going to simplysafe.com/Brian. There will never be a better time to get real security for your home. Go to simplysafe.com/Brian. Stay protected and stay one step ahead with Simply Safe.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
The email was not sent from you. It was sent from a political consulting firm called Dynamic SRG that says, "We are thrilled to announce we are working with Congressman Hakeem Jeffries. Shoot us an email or give us a call if you would like to get involved." What's your response? Do you recall that email being sent to Jeffrey Epstein from that team?
Yeah, of course, I have no recollection of the email. I've never had a conversation with him, never met him, know nothing about him other than the extreme things that he's been convicted of doing. And that's why, I'm just strongly supportive of the effort, backing the survivors to make sure that everything can come out, whatever is in those Department of Justice files.
So you never got a donation from Jeffrey Epstein or anything like that?
Certainly not.
Well, we'll see. They call him the Brooklyn's Obama, Hakeem Jeffries, 2013, I think it was, or 2015. So this guy mostly gave to Democratic causes. I mean, it was billions to Democratic causes. So then they got this other problem with Stacey Plaskett. She's a delegate, doesn't can't vote, but a delegate from the Virgin Islands. She evidently, and it makes sense that she's in the Caribbean. He's in the Caribbean. He's got his own island. He evidently had a place in the Virgin Islands. They were friends. You were friends with Jeffrey Epstein even after he went to jail on weekends for that ridiculous light sentence that he got? So now they're saying, we're going to censure her. And evidently they changed their mind and they did a kind of an exchange to not censor a Republican. But here's Hakeem Jeffries. They know that these text messages were exchanged in real time with Michael Cohen testifying. Jeffrey Epstein's watching in his apartment in New York and he's texting Plaskett because she knows he's about to speak. And now Hakeem Jeffries is saying, wait a second, I thought it was Trump and Jeffries is a problem. Now Trump and Epstein's a problem. Hakeem Jeffries says, now I got a bigger problem. So let's bring in Rich Lowry, editor of National Review, author of The Case for Nationalism. Rich, there's a lot of Democrats that are going to feel the water get really hot really quick.
Yeah, the irony of these emails that were released last week, Brian, is all these people are emailing with Epstein after Trump had cut him off. And yes, Trump was in a lot of these emails. I don't know, someone ran a headline. He's in half the emails. I don't know what the percentage was. But yeah, he was, because this was a period of time, we still live in this era, when everyone was talking about Trump, right? He came down the escalator. He was running for president, won the nomination, was president. And Epstein knew him. So people thought he knew dirt on him, how to bring him down, et cetera, et cetera. And he was friends with people who are left of center, the Larry Summerses of the world. Now, there are some exceptions, Peter Thiel, Steve Bannon. But these people, they liked being around Epstein, liked emailing him because they thought he was fun. They thought he was charming. They thought he was rich. They thought he was influential, and they thought he had friends correctly with a lot of other influential people. So that's why they're dealing with him. It wasn't a blackmail plot, and that's very likely the reason Trump was friendly with him for years, 20 years ago or whatever it was.
So here's Hakeem Jeffries from CNN trying to dodge these questions. Now he's trying to dodge questions about Plaskett. Cut six.
Well, Stacey Plaskett is not accused of violating any House rule, any law, any statute. And she's clearly and unequivocally denounced Jeffrey Epstein. And I think what the survivors fought for today is the type of transparency that came out of the House, went through the Senate, and is now on its way to Donald Trump's desk, where hopefully he'll sign it.
So now he's got that question, and then Plaskett has to answer. Cut 10.
Now, I heard recently from someone that I was seeking advice from him. Let me tell you something. I don't need to get advice on how to question anybody from any individual. I have been a lawyer for 30 years. I have been a narcotics prosecutor in New York City. I have been had the honor of being.
OK, that stuff has nothing to do with it. She was getting advice from Epstein, who knew her cell number, texted her to ask this question to Michael Cohen, and she took it. Afterwards, he texted back and said, good job. So she was getting advice. So you can go ahead through your resume, but no one believes it.
Yeah, that's a ridiculous denial. And the fact that she's been a lawyer for a long time doesn't mean that these texts don't exist. They do. And again, the reason why Trump was mentioned in a lot of these emails is because people were reaching out, like Michael Wolff, to Epstein on how to bring down Trump. So it's hard to understand how this is a Trump scandal. Now, I think, when we see the files, there'll be some more embarrassing information about Trump because he knew Epstein, and that's embarrassing. But we'll also see a lot more of this kind of stuff and Larry Summers and all the rest of it, other people who we haven't focused on getting a torpedo to the bow.
Is there anything different from being friends with Harvey Weinstein, like the Clintons were and Oprah was?
Sure.
Then all of a sudden he ends up being this horrible person. I don't know if they knew or not. The blood cycle they did, but who knows? And then O.J. Simpson, he was an A-lister, right? Double murderer.
Well,
Bill Cosby, wasn't Bill Cosby a cool guy? If he knew your name as a comedian, you made it.
Absolutely. Epstein had social cachet, and I think this is the conspiracy right out in the open. A lot of the members of the elite, they have zero standards, right? They didn't care. They had to scrape with the law or look the other way because he was fun and he was influential and he was rich. And that's a disgrace. It's a scandal, but it's right out in the open.
So let's talk about what's happening on the left, and that's the rise of socialism. You know about Mamdani. You know about the Seattle mayor as a socialist wins. You know that Bernie Sanders, the most popular Democratic senator, 70% approval rating in Vermont. Now you know about a congressman, a wannabe congressman, 35 years old, from the Parkland, emerged in the Parkland shooting situation. He's an avowed socialist. He's running for Nadler's seat. Now you have Hakeem Jeffries being primaried by a socialist. Rich, make sense of this.
Well, they're experiencing some of the disruption that Republicans did in the Tea Party era, where you have a grassroots movement that's far to the left and thinks the establishment is useless, is not fighting hard enough, and needs to be crushed. So Democrats avoided kind of this sort of dynamic for a long time. One, because when the Tea Party rose, they had a president, and a president always provides a coherence on the party. Now, they lost to Trump in 16, obviously, but then they have Biden, who's an establishment figure. But now they're fully in this mode, and it can freshen you up. It can get people on their toes. That's a good phenomenon. It can also result in the nomination of people who can't win, which we saw some of that in the Tea Party as well, Tea Party era.
But here's the difference. The Tea Parties were just conservative, just more conservative, right? More fiscally conservative. So it kind of made sense. But with a Democrat, when you go, I'm socialist, you're picking a different party. I mean, the Democratic Socialists of America, they want to disavow and divest from Israel. They want to get rid of cops. I mean, they are an extremist. And those extremists are the ones, rising right now. They think they're more radical than Mamdani, at least on the surface. They might be the of one mind, but right now on the surface.
Yeah, but it's all on a spectrum. Yeah, it is technically a different party, but all those positions you outlined are positions that the Democratic Party holds, or at least the left part of the Democratic Party holds. So the socialism, I don't see it as a categorical difference. I just see it as a slightly more radical version of what we get from Democrats all the time. So that's why I think it's similar to the Tea Party phenomenon. Now, look, the Tea Party, not a formal party, but they were outsiders, right? And they existed on a spectrum with typical Republican ideology, but thought that they were pure and the party needed to be pure. And they went, and we got some good members from the Tea Party, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, among others. But then we also got some candidates whose names we've forgotten because they lost winnable races.
So we're watching right now a crackdown in Chicago, a crackdown in Seattle. I think they're still there. We saw D.C. I think there's some remnants there. There was some big improvement on crime and cleaning the place up. And now we have also we can't forget about Memphis. So the president's also considering putting troops into New Orleans next, at which time we get a lot of these scenes where local are protesting and going after ICE. Here's Tom Homan on this. Cut 34.
Bottom line is ISIS protecting their communities and all these people. Where were they when President Obama was president and ICE removed 409,000 people, was a record at the time? Where were they? Where were they when 500,000 children were smuggled in this country and they lost track of 300,000 of them? You know what President Trump has done? I was with HHS today, Jesse. We already found over 30,000 of these kids. You know, by 3 weeks ago, we're at 24,000. Now we're over 30,000. Wow. And we're going to keep working until we find every one of these kids. President Trump's saving lives every day. Most secure border in the history of the nation.
But the way we're going about it, is this the best way to go about it?
I don't think it's necessarily the best way. If I could wave a wand, Brian, I'd have an E-Verify system where employers absolutely had to confirm that their workers are legal, and if not, they get thrown against the wall. But I think what's going on here, one, there are a lot of bad guys we need to go get, and they're going and getting them. Two, they want the deportation numbers to be higher rather than lower, so you got to cast a wide net. And three, I think this is part of it, you do want the images and the headlines and the news stories, oh my gosh, you know, they're going after everyone. So I want to go home on my own. And they are, self-deportation is kind of the magic bullet here. It doesn't expend any resources. It doesn't involve putting one in detention. It just involves them leaving the same way they came, just going, flying, driving back, whatever it is. And that appears to be working. And I think that's a huge benefit to what they're doing.
Because you got to worry about the Hispanic vote. Even though I think I want all the illegals out too, within reason. But you got to do worry about the perception with the Hispanic community, whether you think you're right or not. Correct?
Yeah, I just think their attitude probably is, this is an enormous problem. It's an enormous problem before Biden. Biden made it exponentially worse. And if we're going to move the needle in the opposite direction, this is what you got to do. And you got to catalyze self-deportations. And then you know, you do this for a couple of years, and then maybe you can let up. Maybe you have a compromise on some sort of so-called comprehensive immigration reform or whatever it is. But you got to do it now and hope you can come back with Latino voters later. I think that's a pretty reasonable bet. I understand why they're doing it. Let's just say that.
Hey, Rich, just looking ahead, there is, you know, President Trump's got 3 years. You know he's going to make noise right through the final day. Right. Make trying to do the best he can. He's not one to phone it in ever. So having said that, do you think we're going to be looking at a debate with the Republicans in the primary season of the traditional Republicans of Nikki Haley and maybe not Chris Christie, but that type of and people like, I guess, some more traditional, you know, people like a Mitt Romney and a George Bush would be. With the MAGA people on stage? Or do you think it's just if MAGA against MAGA against MAGA against MAGA?
Yeah, I think probably the latter. There wasn't much of a Nikki Haley lane last time. And I think it's gotten smaller and diminished. And I think what we've seen in the various debates over anti-Semitism, et cetera, these are internal MAGA debates. And I think that's what the primaries will look like. I'm not sure how competitive the primaries will be if J.D. Vance gets Trump's endorsement, which I think is likelier than not.
All right, Rich, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Rich Lowry,
hey,
National Review.
Thanks so much, Brian.
Pick up a copy. 1-866-408-7669. We could talk more about crooks, more about Epstein, the Saudi Arabia, the impactful visit. President's got 43% approval rating on foreign policy. I think it should be about 60% on foreign policy. For me, I'd give him an 85% approval rating on foreign policy. But considering in this first term, he was at 35%, and Obama was the same thing, and Bush was the same thing. Biden should have got a 2%. But having said that, does it show that, can you believe this president's got better numbers now on foreign policy than the economy? Can both improve? Brian Kilmeade Show.
Where big stories meet bigger conversations. Stay informed and energized with the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
If America has an affordability crisis, it tends to be in places Democrats govern, like New York, Illinois, and California, which all feature high taxes, soaring housing costs, and stagnant outcomes in basic areas like education and infrastructure.
So that's Fareed Zakaria. And I watch him, you know, I always like it. I seem to be in the car on Sundays when he's on. And he's, in the beginning, he was just couldn't believe Trump's president. Everything he did was wrong. The Russia hoax was real. Impeachment was overdue, 2020. And then after the election, I think he, like Bill Maher, is giving it a fresh look. And if you watch him before, he's very respected internationally, does all the major interviews with these other leaders, including the Iranian leaders. I'm just struck by the fact that he erupted on Bill Maher's show one day and just with Rahm Emanuel right next to him, who used to be mayor of Chicago, came out and said, most of these cities, almost all of these cities are run by Democrats and the cities are doing terrible. They're cost overruns. They're not in good shape. Crime is everywhere and it's on the Democrats. You can't blame Republicans. And Rahm Emanuel had no idea what to say, but he knew that Fareed Zakaria was right. And then he came out with that statement last weekend. He kind of reads his column out in his first block, and even if he does a different topic, it'll just wipe to something else. And he just focused on this, and he says, you know, I go to these cities in America, but I travel the globe, and we are struggling because of these democratic principles where everything costs more, but you can only blame one party. Listen.
Consider New York City. The mayor-elect wants to spend more money on shiny new programs, but surely it would be worth first asking, what happened to the money already raised? In 2012, toward the end of Michael Bloomberg's mayoralty, the city's budget was about $65 billion. Today, it is about $116 billion, an increase of more than 75%. Spending has soared while the subway deteriorates, housing costs rise, and public schools remain mediocre. The result is a paradox that defines much of blue state America. Government that promises more, costs more, but delivers less.
So you see what he's saying? And he goes on to say this. He walks around New York and he says, there's scaffolding everywhere. I don't get it. You can't build anything. You can't build any new apartments. You can't do any other structures. It takes forever with all the rules and regulations that they have. Now, any modern society, if you ever see an earthquake hit a developing nation, they have no building codes. And you'll watch them just crush it on itself. Iran had a earthquake about 10 years ago. They basically live in mud huts and everything just fell apart. So I know there's got to be codes. I get it. And it helps all of us, whether it's fire escape situations or to stop what happened to the World Trade Center, give people a way to get out. I understand it. But it's gone way over the top. Democrats don't seem capable of going in and saying, this is too much. I can't get new apartments built. I can't get affordable housing built. We got all this room and we can't get builders. I got all these construction people. I got all these unions, but I can't get anything done. There doesn't seem to be any urgency there. And he brings up that Eric Adams tried to do that and couldn't. And you do, if you walk, I just get used to it. But if you walk around New York City, and all of you will visit if you don't live here, you'll just see the scaffolding and you think to yourself, wow, they're doing a lot of work here. And then you realize scaffolding's there next year and the next year and the next year. A lot of it's to block the pedestrians from falling rocks. The facade's falling down. Now, there's some areas that are getting built. I get it. But it's just too costly. So you're not going to get new apartments that'll drive the price down because people aren't building like they should. And now you're going to freeze the rents. So you jack up my taxes, you jack up the building fees, you jack up my utilities, and then you're telling me I can't raise the rent on people? Not because I'm a bad person, but I got to pay my bills. So I will leave these rooms empty, driving the price up. And if you're going to keep it level, maintenance is going to be tough too. Maybe your goal is to force all the builders and owners out so the city takes over it. That's a bigger tax bill, and the city can't run anything. Unless you turn over the private sector, which makes you think to yourself, if you're going to turn it back to the private sector to manage, why not let them own? I hope that made sense. But when you see a Democrat make this type of logic and go after the Democratic Party, I think it's noteworthy.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country and around the world. This is appropriate for the location. The police commissioner, widely thought to be very successful, certainly effective, Jessica Tisch, it will stay aboard with Zohra Mamdani, and he's pleased by that. Why? She's got a lot of prestige. She's got a lot of credibility. She earned it under Adams, had a lot of autonomy. And had to overcome a very liberal DA that wants to let everybody out and not prosecute anyone out of prison, that is. But I hope that she extracted something from the avowed socialist who doesn't like the police and hates Jews. I hope she was able to say, all right, no civilian board is going to decide discipline on the police force. We are going to need another 5,000 cops. Don't tell me we don't need more. Make sure that academy's stocked and also provide an incentive for people to come on and stay here. And you can't close prisons. You can't close them. That's what he's been wanting to do. Where do you put the people? What you do is you let them out on probation, and then we're all going to be screwed. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
When's the day going to come that the FBI is going to level with us and just make everything public? I mean, listen, Crooks is dead. You're not going to prosecute him. Let's see every piece of information.
Thomas Crooks, the would-be assassin of Donald Trump. Theories, conspiracies, fairy tales. What's the truth? And what's truly an attempt to go for clicks over facts?
Number two.
Today and tomorrow we're going to announce that we are going to increase that $600 billion to almost $1 trillion of real investment and real opportunity by details in many areas.
Now you're saying to me now that the $600 billion will be $1 trillion.
Definitely.
MBS visit showing Trump has done the impossible, being the most popular American president in Israel and through the Middle East, especially in Saudi Arabia, including with economic powerhouse MBS. Could it all build towards peace in Gaza and an expansion of the Abraham Accords? I think so.
Number one.
Do you recall that email being sent to Jeffrey Epstein from that team?
Yeah, of course. I have no recollection of the email. I've never had a conversation with him. Never met him.
So you never got a donation from Jeffrey Epstein or anything like that?
Certainly not.
Okay, Hakeem Jeffries, the text messages, the emails show that they were pushing Jeffrey Epstein to go support your campaign in Brooklyn. You got what you wanted, Dems. Now you should start fearing what you got, as all of Epstein's files are about to be released by President Trump. Already caught in the crossfire, CEOs of Goldman Sachs, Harvard presidents, former Treasury secretaries. Drum roll, please. Hakeem Jeffries, as you just heard. So there'll be a lot of unintentional fallout. Now, are you going to tell me that if you release Jeffrey Epstein's logs, as Bill Clinton and Hillary are not going to be all over it? Bill Gates is not going to be all over it? You think it's just Prince Andrew? Have you pre-thought this? Here's what Congressman Tim Burchett said, and I thoroughly agree. Cut 19.
I suspect when it all goes out, the Democrats in Congress will have to find another shiny object down the road to kick. And they keep trying to kick Donald Trump, and they haven't been able to do it yet. You know, it's very ironic, the fact that I asked for unanimous consent last week and the liberal media just went ballistic. And the Congress went ballistic. So we're trying to hide it. And what did Schumer do? As soon as he got it, unanimous consent, he wanted it on the board. And it just tells you just how backwards and just how really diabolical the left is.
So look, I mean, Larry Summers, Treasury Secretary, sometimes critic of Joe Biden, but most of all worked for Obama and worked for Clinton. Now he says he's resigned from his board position at OpenAI. By the way, what's he doing there? He probably doesn't know anything about AI anyway, just to somebody have prestige and bring in money. So Larry Summers now retreats from public life, he says. He resigns from the OpenAI board, and we'll see. Because he says he'll still teach classes at Harvard, won't be doing anything publicly for a while as he recalibrates his personal life and his choices. Married guy, calling up Jeffrey Epstein, asking advice to how to pick up a younger woman. So how does that look? Goldman Sachs CEO. In a Wall Street Journal story, Rum Mueller had dozens of meetings with Epstein in the years after her White House service before she became a top lawyer at Goldman Sachs. Epstein also planned for her to join a 2015 trip to Paris and a 2017 visit to Epstein's private island. Emails reveal Rum Mueller, a former Obama White House attorney, also referred to herself as Epstein's lawyer in one email and had a friendly relationship with this disgraced lawyer. Here's one exchange which is interesting. With Rum Mueller, who is a Democrat, do you think Bill Clinton would like to join you, me, Chud, and Steve, whoever Chud is? Could be very fun, all off the record. She replied, "Why? While he might like to, his lawyer would advise against it." Smiley face. This is what's going to happen. That's why a lot of people didn't know this guy was as bad as he was, or looking to pass some transaction, didn't really look into why he was going to go into jail. Or only went to jail on weekends, saw a soft sentence, and thought it was probably no big deal. They don't care. Everyone's hanging out with everyone. That's the club you and I weren't invited to. We don't get into those clubs. A lot of them we don't even know exists. They get invited to mansion houses that we didn't even know. We couldn't see past the hedges. But that's who was all hanging out. And now, Tom Massey has to get it out for the women. And Ro Khanna has to get it out for the women. So you got Summers. Now you got the CEO, Rum Mueller, of the lawyer of at Goldman Sachs. Then you got this woman, Plaskett, who's a Virginia, a Virgin Islands delegate. This is what's going to happen over the next few days. And people are going to bury it. They're just going to look for Trump stuff. That's it. We're going to keep going. Meanwhile, there's more stuff going on. Today, right now, there's a investors convention going on at the Kennedy Center because MBS is there, one of the richest countries. Individually, he's one of the richest individual donors. We know he's all over AI. We know he's all over, wants to partner with us on that. And he wants to partner with us when it comes to the military. Why? Dangerous neighborhood. How did Trump win him over? Well, number one, they have a personal relationship from the first term, okay? Number two, he's not Joe Biden, so he's got to be pleased with that. Number three, he understood that the Houthis are a problem. The Houthis have been rocketing Saudi Arabia for about 7 years. They're just sending rockets into Riyadh. And when they started bombing back Yemen, they got ridiculed for being of their harsh treatment. And that's why Joe Biden, part of the reason why Joe Biden tried to isolate him. He comes in and says the Houthis are no longer on the terror watch list, thoroughly supported by Iran, who was goosing them to do just that. So he says they're a pariah nation. So now we realize the Houthis are a problem. They shut down the waterways, shut down shipping, were rocketing Israel. All that has stopped because Trump bombed them relentlessly, led by Secretary of War Hegseth. And now he starting warming up relationships with Saudi Arabia, who now will be able to defend itself if they have F-35s and they have trained pilots. Why is that important? Because Iran is their eternal enemy. And who took out Iran's nuclear program? Israel and the U.S. How does that help? The entire region outside Assad, who's now out of power, and the Houthi rebels, who they put in power, look at Israel, Iran as the problem. A militant, terroristic nation looking to make a caliphate of predominantly Shia Muslims. Not a good combination if you're a Sunni country called Saudi Arabia. So MBS spoke yesterday, took questions in an open forum, and it looked pretty promising. Now, instead of $600 billion they promised to invest in here, it went up to $1 trillion. The Treasury Secretary, quite happy, cut 25.
It was the president at his best, working for the American people, always looking for more for them. And it was a big day here today.
What does that look like? I mean, it sounds great, $600 billion to a trillion, but how does that roll out? What does it actually look like?
Well, think about it. If you are another country in the world, what do you look to the U.S. for? What are the sources of American power? And that's what we saw on display here today. First, there's the military. So Saudis are going to be buying F-35s, coveted by everyone around the world, proof that they are a valuable ally.
So they feel as though they can get the investment in here. And when the investment comes in here and they make these power stations, start making these chips, the theory is we will have American workers working there in the U.S. And Saudi Arabia is fine with that. They have problems with their own workforce. Nathan Sales, former U.S. ambassador at large, knows the regions and sees the progress being made. So people could understand, as much as some of the ways and means and way they do things in Saudi Arabia are nothing like we understand, it is light years better than where they were. Cut 28.
The Saudi crown prince has articulated a really sweeping and reformist vision for what his country could look like in 20, 30, 40 years. And it's not a petrostate that is a commodity exporter, and that's the entirety of its economy. They want to encourage innovation, high tech, and other forms of investment. And that's why these economic ties that we're hearing today between the United States and Saudi Arabia are so important. Let's see what these look like in practice. But the more that we can cooperate and invest mutually in each other's countries, the more we'll be able to accomplish together economically.
And you know what? If we're investing and we're working with them, you know who's not? The Russians and Chinese. I'm not saying we're going to thoroughly box the Chinese out, but as they get coached with the Chinese, I think he's going to keep them at arm's length because he doesn't want to jeopardize the relationship with us. And he also is reality. He also knows that President Trump, you take a political risk with Saudi Arabia. We know that most of the hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. We know Khashoggi was killed, they believe, by the Saudi government, led by MBS. Was he trying to be scared? Were they trying to just push him to stop giving more favorable coverage? I don't know. But it was 4 years ago, and the world cannot function, or the West cannot function just isolating Saudi Arabia because it doesn't work. As long as there's a Russia and China and a Europe that needs their market and needs their oil, they have to agree of leverage. President Trump feels differently. What happened with Khashoggi? No idea. But the thing has been worked out through the courts. People have been arrested, selling, doing time, and that's good enough for him. So meanwhile, the other big story is the assassination at Butler that killed Corey Compentore and seriously wounded two others and got the president in the ear. We find out about Crooks. We find out about his personal footprint. And we see the cyber footprint is much bigger than we've been told. But it doesn't mean he acted with other people. The White House press secretary, Caroline Leavitt, said Americans deserve answers about Crooks and why he tried to assassinate Trump. She says the question was from Miranda. I believe the question from Miranda was the Post reported on Monday that the unearthed social media posts have added questions in the White House. The questions are definitely deserving of answers, and I understand why the public wants those answers, and I believe the president does too, says Caroline. It's a good question, and it's one I'd like to see answer. I think all Americans would like to do it. What do we know about Crooks? Identified as a they-them. Trail of violent extremist posts expressed admiration for mass violence against the squad, against Democrats, and then against Trump and Fox News and other Trump haters. What do we know? He flipped in around 2019, and we know that his family said about 2 years before the assassination, something snapped in the guy. Yeah, great. Something snapped, and you leave him out in the open to try to kill us. Here's Miranda Devine, Cut 31.
Where the FBI has gone wrong, I think, is in the investigation and in their sort of lack of transparency and honesty with the American public. And we saw Christopher Wray, the former FBI director, testify to Congress just a week after Butler, back in July of 2024. He said, when asked if the FBI had encountered this 20-year-old would-be assassin Thomas Crooks before Butler, he said very carefully, he said, we have searched our database and can find no mention of him. It really, when I now see from our source all the digital footprint that shows how active Thomas Crooks was.
So the FBI missed it during the Biden years. They weren't looking for it, even though it was sent to them and it was alerted to them. They put them on the retweets. Joe Ziegler's coming up at the bottom of the hour to talk about whistleblowers too versus the big guy, the two special agents versus Biden, crime family, and a corrupt bureaucracy. Joe Ziegler will be with us there. And we had a whistleblower go to Miranda Devine, we imagine it's an FBI agent, and tell that story too. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Real talk, real guests, real insight. Where curiosity meets conversation. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This administration is pitting our uniformed military
and intelligence community professionals
against American citizens. Like us, you all swore an oath
to protect and defend this Constitution.
Right now, the threats to our Constitution aren't just coming from abroad,
but from right here at home.
Our laws are clear. You can refuse illegal orders.
You can refuse illegal orders.
You must refuse illegal orders.
So think about this. Senator Mark Kelly, Senator Alyssa Slotkin, Congressman Jason Crow, all saying refuse orders. A message to the military. You don't have to do what the president says or what Pete Hegseth says. This is members of the military. It's not some crazy purple-haired nose ring protester in Seattle. Do you believe how irresponsible that is? Number one, you know the rules and regulations when you become a member of the military. You don't need to be briefed by lawmakers who have just gone pure politician. Number two, where was the same attitude when it comes to leaving Afghanistan in a 20-plus year war effort, which was done by a guy that could barely even recognize his name, and that was Joe Biden? He's the one who pulled out. You had the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff know it's a bad idea, testify it's a bad idea, but he followed orders. Then you had General McKenzie, knows it's a bad idea, watch this whole thing fall apart. He followed orders. You watch this guy do what he did, Joe Biden, over the last 4 years, and you go, okay, you could defy illegal orders. Why? You don't like the fact that we're blowing up drug boats leaving Venezuela? You don't like the show of muscle in the region? Okay, if you're a sailor, if you want to get off in Trinidad, Tobago, and defect, Senator Kelly says it's no problem. Congressman Crow says no problem. Yeah, they're all veterans, and they're thinking as politicians because they think to themselves, let me see. The peace is coming to the Middle East, the attack on Iran. Okay, you're a fighter pilot. And they tell you it's time to take out Iran's nuclear program. A lot of Democrats aren't for that. So it's okay to disobey orders. How about half the Air Force? Half the Air Force are Democrats or Republicans, and they're not going to do what the president says. Well, you know what? I'm having a bad day. I'm a little older. I don't want to risk my pension. I think it's a dangerous mission. I'm 36 years old. I'm about to get out. Got a young family. I am going to disobey. I mean, I can't think of a more un-American message than what these guys and these women put out that are supposed to tell everybody, by the way, President Trump is so evil, even though you're members of the military, they're serving our country, you can decide you know better than your leaders. Hey, you know, on D-Day, doesn't seem like a good plan. It seems like a lot of people are going to get killed. And, you know, invading against a standing army that took over Europe, I'm not going to do it. I think it's a bad order. I'm going to go against it. I will not follow that order. Why, in the future, 60 years from now, we'll have a senator hop on camera and make sure that I know that it's my right to disobey orders. It's just another way to divide the country from people that should know better. I mean, all these guys, Kelly, who I always give a second chance because he's an astronaut, fighter pilot, military guy, you'd think is a little bit of a cut above, more American than Democrat, but I'm just wrong. Soros, he's there with Soros and everybody else just collecting money. He's going to run for president too. Jason Crow, Alyssa Slotkin, the ones that pride themselves on being reasonable and on tough issues, forever sullied by this irresponsible take. How do you feel? We'll talk about it. I'm the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Breaking news. Unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We are back, and we're going to be keeping an eye on what's happening on Capitol Hill. Today, there's going to be a legitimate health care debate where both sides are trying to fix health care. And I'm naive enough to think they could want to get things done. Obamacare is failing epically. You know that all the major health care companies have dropped out of the exchanges, like Cigna out, Aetna out, United out, because they were losing billions of dollars. So now you have Obamacare with $6,000 deductibles being thoroughly subsidized to the tune of more billions of dollars still to have this terrible health care. So every Democrat knows this is bad. So they lost the shutdown, and now I think they're going to work something out on Capitol Hill. My hope is that Bernie Sanders and the whole Medicare for All crowd keeps their mouth shut and lets the doctors and the health care experts on both sides take over. That's my hope. Meanwhile, let's talk about this. Wasn't too long ago when two brave IRS agents spoke up and talked about what was going on, the bias at their organization. And they wrote a book. It's called The Whistleblowers Versus the Big Guy, Two Special Agents, the Biden Crime Family, and a Corrupt Bureaucracy. One of those authors, Joe Ziegler, joins us now. Hey, Joe.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Hey, Joe, wasn't too long ago we were watching you testify on Capitol Hill. First off, for people that don't remember, describe to me working at the IRS and noticing what you were noticing and when you first got disturbed by it.
So I, IRS special agent, was working for an international tax and financial crimes group, opened up the investigation as a normal course of my business, the Hunter Biden investigation. And it was from very early on that individuals at the IRS and individuals at DOJ, I knew that they weren't acting appropriately. I knew that they were trying to slow walk the case, that they were essentially providing preferential treatment to the Biden family. And it really started giving concerns, not to the level of blowing the whistle, but ultimately decided to come forward as a whistleblower when they were getting ready to do essentially prosecute Hunter Biden. And they removed me from the investigation. And that's when I decided to come forward as a whistleblower.
And Gary Shapley, too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Gary Shapley, my boss at the time, who was instrumental in documenting a lot of the issues that we saw within the IRS and DOJ.
What were some of the disturbing things that you saw that were in violation of IRS codes that were being ignored?
So very, very early on, there was from wanting to go overt in the investigation to doing actual search warrants of Hunter Biden's residence at the time, the guest house in Delaware, there was a storage unit. When we were trying to go overt, there was comments made from the prosecutors that they were concerned about optics. If you look at the Department of Justice manual, when it comes to prosecuting cases, I don't know where it says optics should be considered in how we proceed forward with normal investigative steps. So there were multiple things very early on that we knew that we weren't acting appropriately, but we just continued along. And my hope with doing the investigation was that we were going to follow the leads, follow the investigative steps, and that we were going to essentially, if charges were warranted, we were going to hold Hunter Biden or whoever else accountable for what they may have done criminally wrong.
So, but you were able, I mean, he was charged for IRS violations for not paying his taxes, and he was probably going to go to jail. It looked like he was going to get convicted until his dad pardoned him. So wasn't justice being served?
Yeah. So, I mean, to be completely honest with you, a lot of that wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for Gary and I. And we detail a lot of that in the book that are testifying publicly in front of the Oversight Committee. James Comer and Jason Smith deciding to write the amicus brief to the judge in Delaware. And thank God that we had that judge in Delaware that took a hard look at what we had brought forward, but also the plea agreement to see that it was not standard, that we weren't treating this person the same. And for something that I've never seen happen before, she essentially threw out that plea agreement. She thwarted DOJ's hand, and they had to make David Weiss special counsel. They had to charge the gun, which he was convicted by a jury of his peers. And then he ultimately pled guilty to the tax charges. So all of those things were done, if not for Gary and I, and for us putting our lives on the line and essentially blowing up our professional and personal lives at the cost of our American democracy.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. So the question is, too, that we always had is, it's if the president wasn't president, if this guy was just doing his own thing and it didn't affect policy, it becomes something you just make sure justice is handed out equally. But you look at some of the deals he was doing internationally, it absolutely could affect policy. Joe Biden was asked about that. What about Hunter's business dealings? Cut 47.
How many times have you ever spoken to your son about his overseas business dealings?
I have never spoken to my son about his overseas business dealings. I have never discussed with my son or my brother or anyone else anything having to do with their businesses, period.
So what do you think about that?
So it's actually quite comical because the narrative from the White House continued to change after that. It was, I never spoke with my son about his businesses, to I never benefited financially from any of my son's overseas business dealings. To the narrative continued to change as we presented more documents to the House Ways and Means Committee, which they voted out and released. So it was very apparent through the documents and evidence that we brought forward to the committees that the Biden family was essentially selling access to individuals in Romania, China, and Ukraine in exchange for a significant amount of money to enrich the Biden family. And this access, even when the vice president wasn't vice president anymore, it was the potential of, look what he became. He became the president of the United States. So that is where I think that the story falls short, is that this was a family that was selling off their name and access to different people within the administration to give benefit and curry favor to other individuals in foreign countries. And that's a big concern. And when it comes to us allowing us to do a normal investigation like we would do in any other case, treat any other taxpayers, we weren't allowed to do that. We weren't allowed to go and ask the questions about Joe Biden's involvement. We weren't able to go and ask the questions that were relevant to the investigation because they were concerned about how that might look.
So were you the only two that were upset by this?
No. So we were probably the only two that came forward publicly who were upset about this. But there were multiple people, even after all of this, that I have talked to on the back end of this, prior FBI agents. We detail some of this in the book, but there were other people that worked the case that I don't think that they wanted to blow up their lives like Gary and I did. And they didn't think that it was worth the sacrifice in doing this. And a lot of, so that's the issue here, is there's a lot of IRS. We found the legal way to come forward as whistleblowers. We were one of the very first in an active investigation to do this. FBI, I don't think it's very easy for them to do that. So I don't think that the processes are there to allow them to come forward like Gary and I did. But I can tell you that there were multiple times that the FBI agents said that we would echo our frustrations. I can remember bringing up 2 years prior to him actually being charged, or a year prior, that we needed a special counsel in the case, that we needed someone to take an independent look at the case, the facts, to make a determination whether we should charge this individual.
So I want you to hear Hunter Biden deny anything, especially with Burisma, any bad dealings. Cut 50.
I don't think I made a mistake in taking the spot on the board. I think I made a mistake in terms of underestimating the way in which it would be used against me. I'm being as honest with you as I possibly can. All I know is that not one investigative body, not one serious journalist has ever come to the conclusion that I did anything wrong or that my father did anything wrong.
So what are your thoughts?
One of the things that we brought forward was he didn't report his income on his tax return in 2014 from the money that he made from Burisma. So for him to say he didn't do anything wrong, that negates everything that he says after that. So I think the point here is that
income, and he knows nothing about oil and gas, but that's not what you, that's not something else. He has no background in it.
Yeah, but but that's my whole point with, I don't think you can believe a word coming out of his mouth. And then you had a Department of Justice who essentially pushed that under the rug, didn't charge that, let the statute of limitations essentially run out. And then they couldn't end up charging him with that. But when it comes to why was he on? I mean, we detail a lot of the different things that were done related to Burisma in the book, and we detail a lot of what was going on at the time, and we kind of lay the puzzle together in a very clear form. And I think that the book does a really good job at that.
Yeah, I hear you. Lastly, I just want you to hear Tony Bobulinski, a guy that really came out right before the election, and no one covered his press conference except Fox, and they just tried to marginalize him. I've never heard the question to Joe Biden, do you know who Tony Bobulinski is? But they met multiple times, and he was all part of it. Brought in to help land the plane on international business dealing. Got out when he realized he was being stabbed in the back. Cut 49.
Joe was flying in to speak about the cancer and the moonshot stuff he was working on, and Hunter and everyone was in town, and they wanted to coordinate me meeting with Joe. And so it was set up for the night of May 2nd at the Beverly Hilton. I first met with Hunter Biden and Jim Biden, and just had a light discussion where they briefed me that, listen, my dad's on the way, and we won't go into too much detail on the business front, but we'll just spend time talking at a high level about you, your background, the Biden family, and then he's got to get some rest because he's speaking as at the conference in the morning.
So it was the beginning. But as far as I know, they denied that that whole thing happened. He even talked about how he met behind the wall, behind the stanchion, and how they talked about just take care of my family. I heard you have enough experience there. So do you feel like this book gives you a degree of justice, Joe, as you put out the whistleblowers versus the big guy, two special agents, the Biden crime family, and a corrupt bureaucracy?
So I think that the vindication comes from that we put our lives on the line, and that ultimately the charges were pushed forward, and Joe Biden was forced to give the pardon and the preemptive pardon to individuals within his family. The justice system actually ended up working because two civil servants put their lives on the line and came forward and showed that. This book details the personal impact of both Gary and I, what we had gone through, how a whistleblower appropriately does this, and then it details the investigation along the way. There's a lot of things that we bring out in the book that haven't been shown before that really detail the behind the scene dynamics of the investigation and becoming a whistleblower. One thing that I want to add to everyone is that this movement is not changed, or we need to move this movement forward. There will always be whistleblowers, but what we can do is support our whistleblowers. And something that I don't think that you've mentioned, but I want to bring out to the audience, is that Gary and I don't make a cent from this book. It is so important for us to support future and current whistleblowers that Empower Oversight is the owner of the book. All the proceeds from the book go to Empower Oversight, all the profits from the book, and they will go and help provide legal support for current and future whistleblowers in the future.
And just let me tell you,
that's why this book is so important.
And by the way, Joe, just let me give you some advice. You can deduct that in your taxes, all right? Because it's a charitable donation.
Not necessarily. So we are the very first IRS working employees or government employees that I know of that have come forward and written a book. The book is actually, we do not own the book. The book is owned by Empower Oversight. And they're a nonprofit group, and we did that because we wanted to continue this movement of supporting current and future whistleblowers.
Are you working there still?
I'm still working at the IRS. I'm currently a senior advisor to the Secretary of Treasury.
All right, great. Joe, congratulations on the book. I look forward to talking to you again about it.
All right, really appreciate it. Thank you for having us on your show.
Pick it up. The Whistleblowers versus the Big Guy. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow starting November 30th on FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
Fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Another episode, another season of What Made America Great.
is now on Fox Nation. It took me a year to shoot it. The producer of Fox Nation are phenomenal. Scheduled dozens of shoots in order to pull it off. I think you're going to like all of it, especially the one on Washington's Crossing. In fact, we did it on a day I think was just as cold as when Washington crossed the Delaware. My big advantage was I had shoes and a coat. Many soldiers didn't. Listen.
Where am I now?
This is the site where George Washington and his army crossed the Delaware River. There were two ferries that operated here, the McConkie Ferry and the Johnson Ferry, and the army utilized those ferries to get the horses and artillery across the river. On the night of the crossing, they all converged at McConkie's Ferry so that they could all cross at the same time.
Let's set the scene. What was happening in our wars?
1776 was a year of absolute disaster for the American Army. They had started the year relatively confident because of some of the victories that they got in 1775, Lexington and Concord, Bunker Hill. And when 1776 comes around, the British and their Hessian allies launch one of the largest invasion forces ever assembled. They send approximately 35,000 troops to New York City, and they absolutely decimate Washington's army.
So, and we bring you right back to the site, and you get a real sense of what they went through. And you see the campsites they were staying in, some of the structures still stand, and you get the idea of what happened. I mean, not only did they have to lose a battle, get reconvene, cross the Delaware, dead of winter, through the ice, get on a ship, and then they got to go 10, 20 miles and take on a fighting force of Germans, Hessians back then, as well as the British, and surprise them. On Christmas, they did, they would, they'd win. Then they had a win at the Battle of Trenton, and then they got on a pretty good roll. But it wouldn't mean that there wouldn't be some down times and bleak times where many of the troops just said, I got to go back to my farm. My family can't work without me. We're not winning here. I'm out. But I think we got to tell that story in year 250 to fully understand how special this country is. And there's other great episodes, too. Fort Ticonderoga will be out there, and you're going to see three other fantastic episodes. So What Made America Great on Fox Nation. On Fox Nation, the app you have simply love. Now, today we're going to talk about healthcare, but also we're going to find out if the president's going to sign the legislation on his desk that fast-tracked right through the House and Senate yesterday to release the Epstein trial. Yesterday, Chuck Schumer was just beside himself with happiness. He's happy for now. I just don't know how long. Cut to.
Right now, there's no reason it can't be on the president's desk in an hour. Second, the president has to sign it. You never know with him. He said he would. Let's wait and see. But third, we have to make sure that all of the documents are released, that there are no games.
Yes. Make sure all the Bill Gates documents are there. Make sure all the Bill Clinton exchanges are there. Let's get the plane manifest and find out who was on that plane. And then we could find out also maybe the women and some of the interaction with the women. Maybe some of their are on there while watching their privacy. Problem is, this is going to be so ham-handed in its release, thanks to the way it passed through the House and Senate. There's going to be a lot of names exposed and sullied, and sadly, some of the victims are going to be re-victimized because of the way they did this. Every time you had an amendment, they say you're covering things up. He was a Democratic donor. Now you got what you wanted. Can we possibly, after this, get back to business and debate?
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show coming to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, where I guess New Yorkers got some good news. Jessica Tisch will stay aboard and be the police commissioner in New York. She's done a really good job since she took over. But Eric Adams, this is the one police commissioner that Eric Adams actually let do her job. And my feeling is, after really thinking about it thinking about walking away, she decided to stay aboard. My hope is she got concessions from him. You're going to allow me to put 5,000 more troops, 5,000 more officers out there, continue to have academies on a regular basis. You will also allow me to not have a civilian board provide discipline on anything that may or may not have gone wrong with the force and the whole social workers to domestic disputes can't happen. I hope she got something for her reputation, because if this guy's true views of police are not good. Karl Rove's going to be with us this hour, and Martha McCallum. They're going to really class up the show. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
When's the day going to come
that the FBI is going to level with us and just make everything public. I mean, listen, Crooks is dead. You're not going to prosecute him. Let's see every piece of information.
Why is that hard? Thomas Crooks, theories, conspiracies, fairy tales. What's the truth and what's truly an attempt to go for clicks over facts?
Number two.
Today and tomorrow, we're going to announce that we are going to increase that that $600 billion to almost $1 trillion of investment, real investment and real opportunity by details in many areas.
Now, you're saying to me now that the $600 billion will be $1 trillion.
Definitely.
Yeah, how great is that? Yeah, let me just emphasize this. For everybody's scoring at home, we're getting $1 trillion. We're getting $1 trillion. MBS visit showing Trump has done the impossible, being the most popular American president in Israel and the Middle East at the same time. Saudi Arabia now at an economics conference today, an investment conference, I should say. We'll see what comes from that.
Number one.
Do you recall that email being sent to Jeffrey Epstein from that team?
Yeah, of course, I have no recollection of the email. I've never had a conversation with him. Never met him.
So you never got a donation from Jeffrey Epstein or anything like that?
Certainly not.
Right. Just your team was trying to get money from him. How do we know? Because you had to have the emails out. Correct? Epstein. I think it's going to blow up right in the Democrats' face. They already saw it with two different lawmakers, an ally of theirs at Goldman Sachs, a key lawyer there that used to work in the Obama administration. She's caught on by it, Rum Miller now. So just wait for the names to come out. And I don't think this helps the country at all either way. But you got what you wanted. And this feels so much like the Russia situation, the extreme reaction on the impeachment situation, and then the January 6th that went on for two full years. Carl Rove joins us now, former Deputy Chief of Staff, Senior Advisor to President Bush, Fox News contributor. Carl, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Carl, you have a gut feeling on where this whole Epstein thing is going?
Well, it's going to keep going because conspiracy nuts want to keep it going. But look, this is a point at which the president can step back and step away. It's now that the documents are all going to come out. We know he had a relationship with him in the 90s and early 2000s. We saw the pictures. There may have been that embarrassing birthday greeting. But following when he found when the then real estate tycoon and The Apprentice star, Donald Trump, found out that Jeffrey Epstein was poaching young women workers at Mar-a-Lago, he severed the relationship, threw him out of the club, and has thought ill of him since. So the president has nothing to gain by continuing to talk about this, either by, you know, proclaiming his innocence. That's already been established. Somebody's going to now have to proactively somehow tie him to Jeffrey Epstein's crimes, which is, I think, impossible. Or, you know, he's got to stop talking about the Democrats. Let the media is going to jump all over this. The president's got more important things to do than to talk about how he wants the DOJ to prosecute his Democratic enemies. He's got better things to do at this time.
No, I hear you. But so you're a communications expert. So, you know, he opens up the cameras three times a day usually. And when they get hit with the Epstein question, what do you say? I'm not talking about that anymore.
Just say, look, it's all out there. You're, everybody's going to know what I know, that I thought he was a pervert, and I severed my relationship when I found out he was preying on the young women at the Mar-a-Lago Club. And I got more important things to do, like making certain that American families can afford the groceries when they go to the grocery store, that their health care costs are coming under control, that our country's growing and prosperous, and the world is at peace. That's what I'm focused on. And I understand why you want to continue to pursue Epstein, but I'm not going to be part of it. You know my role in this. I found out he was a creep, and I kicked him out of the club.
I actually think it's gonna get bad for them when, you know, Hakeem Jeffries, now this comes out, Plackett comes up. Now you're going to tell me Bill Gates is not going to come up? You're going to tell me Bill Clinton?
Yeah.
Bill Clinton wrote a nicer card than Trump. So did they really want to go through this? They refused to testify. They basically ignored subpoenas to testify.
Yeah, exactly. And well, and we're going to see all of these, and there are going to be some people who are now going to regret, as Larry Summers did, that he communicated with the guy after it was clear that he was, you know, not a nice person and could have been criminally, you know, involved.
So, Carl, we have so much to talk about, but I want to just play something I never thought I'd hear, and that is a video of Democrats who are veterans. Essentially, a message to the military, feel free to disobey orders. Listen to Jason Crow, Mark Kelly, and Elisa Slotkin.
This administration is pitting our uniformed military
and intelligence community professionals
against American citizens.
Like us, you all swore an oath
to protect and defend this Constitution.
Right now, the threats to our Constitution aren't just coming from abroad, but from right here at home.
Our laws are clear. You can refuse illegal orders.
You can refuse illegal orders.
You must refuse illegal orders.
Okay. Can I ask you, what do you think about this?
Well, not money well spent by the veterans. They've got better things to do with their time. These things are going to be adjudicated by cities and states suing the administration when the National Guard comes in, and it is best left in the courts and not politicized. And I appreciate their service to our country by donning its uniform, but they're not doing either the service, the military that they served in, or the country that they represent in the Congress by doing this.
So let me see. I think that Iraq war is an illegal war. It's not. I'm not going to serve it anymore. I don't like what we're doing with the people. Let's say Afghanistan. There's a pullout going on. I think it's going to jeopardize our 20-year effort here. I am going to ignore the President of the United States. I mean, do you realize the precedent here? So you don't like the Venezuela operation, or you do? You don't like what we're doing at the border, or you do, because military is being used at the border. You don't like what's going on in Chicago, so you're a member of the National Guard. You're not going to show up. Do we really? Is this what we wanted from our military?
Yeah, no. And again, they've got better things to do with their time than to disparage our military leaders. Do you not think that these questions are seriously considered at the highest reaches of both the civilian and military leadership of the Department of Defense, the Department of War, as the president wants to call it? No, they are. And if there are problems, if people see problems with the way that our military is being deployed, then there are plenty of avenues that they've got other than self-serving, you know, videos and advertisements.
So we're looking at, let's talk about the economy. And when it comes to approval rating, the Democrats are at 38% approval. Trump's at 34. They're at 36% approval. When it comes to who's got a better program, this is basically to who's got a better plan to help the country get out of the economic challenges. 38% say Democrats have a better plan. 36% Republicans have a better plan. We know that the off-year elections did not go well for Republicans, even though we knew it was going to be a challenge. You have a year to do your best to bring prices down. What advice do you have for the Trump administration?
It's a jump ball. So stop talking about things that are not central to this issue. Stop talking about Epstein. Stop talking about the side issues. Stay focused on what are you doing to make the economy stronger. Look, the most valuable thing a president has is the appropriate use of their time. And every time the president goes off script and talks about Epstein or calls a reporter a piggy or any of this other stuff, what happens is that's the story. Not that, geez, I'm getting the Saudis to invest $1 trillion in our economy, which will create jobs and opportunity for all Americans. You know, there are lots of things that they are doing and can do, and in some cases must do that they aren't doing today, like a health care plan. And the president needs to stay focused on the main thing. And so, you know, those are warning signs. He's got the biggest megaphone. And yet he is behind on the two issues that are absolutely critical to the vote decision in 2026. If you look at it, like, for example, there's a new Marquette poll out, and inside of it, it says Democrats are energized, Republicans are not. The approval rating among Republicans for the president is dropping. And I think in large measure, that's because they want to hear him talking about the main thing. And the main thing is the economy. And
Do you know he prefers to talk about the economy? The only thing he likes to talk more about that maybe golf, but every time he talks to him, he wants to talk about the economy. So it's not going to be hard. When you have reporters show up, I mean, I want to just bring it to this, and you're used to this bias, but I've never seen such obvious bias, and it says a lot. Mary Bruce gives a scripted question to the Biden team before one of his rare press conferences, saying, this is the question she writes and asks if she could question. How do you view the path forward? How do you think about your place in history? That was the question. Now, Mary Bruce yells
Khashoggi, murderer, Trump, Epstein, and Trump goes at it with her. But it is just so blatant that even though she's a fine reporter and obviously knows what she's doing, the bias just oozes out. And it's very tough to look the other way, especially if you're Trump.
Yeah, well, but that's the point. Look the other way. Do we really want to spend time talking about the bias of a reporter? Or do we want to spend that time talking about what the president's going to do to make to every American family feel more comfortable about their finances and more optimistic about the future?
When you talk about what's happening in these cities, in Charlotte, in Chicago, in Memphis, I haven't seen much video in Memphis, but there's pushback among the maybe illegal immigrant community about arresting illegal immigrants and bringing them out. Do you have if the approach is illegal immigrants don't belong here, do you have a problem with the optics here?
Well, look, as long as they're going after criminals and they're doing it by the book, no, I don't. But I think they do damage to themselves if they are, you know, showing up at the Home Depot looking for some, you know, poor guy who's, you know, came here illegally but is trying to, you know, put food on the table for himself and his family and has kept his nose clean other than crossing the border. They say they're focused on the criminally illegals, that is to say people who have come here and violated our laws, committed a crime against people or property, and more power to them in doing that. But they've got to be careful about this because, again, the other side is looking to make them an issue. And so go out of your way to try and deny them the opportunity to make you an issue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, for example, there was a big fight over should they be masked or not. I thought the administration came out on the winning side of that because they said our people are being identified and their families are being doxxed. And we as a country cannot stand for that. And I thought that was, that was the way to sometimes the most powerful thing in politics and in public discourse is the counterpunch. And that was a counterpunch.
Here's Tom Homan, Cut 34.
Bottom line is ISIS protecting their communities and all these people. Where were they when President Obama was president and ICE removed 409,000 people was the record at the time? Where were they? Where were they when 500,000 children were smuggling this country and they lost track of 300,000 of them? You know what President Trump has done? I was with HHS today, Jesse. We already found over 30,000 of these kids. You know, about 3 weeks ago, we're at 24,000. Now we're over 30,000.
So that's a good message, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is amazing. Think about this. Until Donald Trump's second administration, the largest number of people being moved out of the country was under Barack Obama. And Tom Homan is right. Where were these critics back then? This is how it shows how partisan our country has become. They were silent or even applauded when Barack Obama was moving people out of the country. But they are furious and consider it, you know, an illegal act and are assaulting ICE officers when Donald Trump does it.
So, Carl, there was a big thing about how George Bush's approval rating, George W. Bush's approval rating, 53%. Do you sense that he is very engaged and knows what's going on in politics, but just wants to stay out of everybody's way now that he's retired? Do you get the sense that we'll see him again out there in 2028 when maybe there's going to be more Bushes back in the fray? I know one's running for governor in Maine.
Yeah, well, his cousin is running for governor of Maine. Look, it's a long time off. Who knows? I don't think we're likely to see him in the way that other former presidents have come into politics, and that's just who he is.
Understood. Thanks so much, Carl Rove. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. And now you're going to upscale the program by going to Martha McCallum.
No. I think that she would say, I have great respect for Carl Rove. It's an honor for me to follow him if I know Martha. But we'll have to see. She could go the other way. Carl Rove, thanks so much.
All the best.
Back in a moment.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, Martha, we have a couple of minutes here before we can continue. First off, who are you having on your show today at 3 o'clock? With all these moving parts, I saw you earlier. We also have that investors conference at the Kennedy Center today. And we know that Cassidy is meeting, hoping for a bipartisan solution to health care. Mm-hmm. What's going on?
So, yeah, we're watching this meeting at the Kennedy Center very closely. We'll be covering that at the top of the show. We hope to have a White House guest joining that. David Asman also is watching all this really closely, and he'll be with us. We're going to talk to Tommy Lahren and Patrick Murphy about this story that you and I were just talking about in the break. This video that was put out by lawmakers, very high-profile Democrats, essentially saying you don't have to follow orders if you don't want to, if you feel that the order is illegal in the military when it comes to these the blowing up of drug boats in the Caribbean on their way to the United States. So that obviously is another huge topic today.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I was so stunned to see Congressman Crow, for example. He wants to be someone who's reasonable. You know, serve the military, appreciate that. But to him to cut that tape, Senator Kelly to cut that tape, Alyssa Slotkin says, and Democrats have to return to common sense, right? She wants to be the moderate alternative along with the new governor, the governor-elect of Virginia. And yet you put yourself on this tape. So do you want people just to say, hey, I'm on the aircraft carrier Ford. Can we go to Trinidad Tobago, or do you mind going to Barbados? I'd like to get off. I don't think this Venezuela operation intimidation is enough. Or let's say you've got the drone operator, you don't want to blow up that drug ship. So now we're going to have our men and women picking and choosing the quality of the mission they're on and the ethics.
I mean, exactly. And I'm kind of surprised. I don't know. The third person, Crow speaks in this video, and he says, against American citizens. So what is he talking about?
Could he be talking about National Guard in Chicago?
Well, that's
and
what
Memphis?
I was wondering. So, you know, I think that it goes broader than this, the Venezuela, the drug boats that are getting blown up, because they start by saying this administration is pitting our uniformed military and intelligence community professionals against American citizens. So that made me think, well, are they talking about the National Guard? Is that their issue?
Why would they say it?
I don't know. Crazy.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
The email was not sent from you. It was sent from a political consulting firm called Dynamic SRG that says, we are thrilled to announce we are working with Congressman Hakeem Jeffries. Shoot us an email or give us a call if you would like to get involved. What's your response? Do you recall that email being sent to Jeffrey Epstein from that team?
Yeah, of course, I have no recollection of the email. I've never had a conversation with him, never met him, know nothing about him other than the extreme things that he's been convicted of doing. And that's why, I'm just strongly supportive of the effort, backing the survivors to make sure that everything can come out, whatever is in those Department of Justice files.
So you never got a donation from Jeffrey Epstein or anything like that?
Certainly not.
We got to find out, aren't we, Martha McCallum?
Yeah. I'm a little... Some parts of this trouble me a little bit, because I think, we're sort of going back to this. Now, I have to be cautious here, because the biggest concern is what Jeffrey says. It is the victims of Jeffrey Epstein, that the miscarriage of justice that was laid out in the Miami Herald piece at the end of 2018 on how Jeffrey Epstein got away with one charge of soliciting prostitution from a minor. That to me is one of the biggest stories here. So the people that were in charge of that investigation, who engineered that outcome? So then to me, anyone who, after that whole story broke in late 2018, when people who were still carrying on substantive conversations, like Larry Summers, for example, like Prince Andrew, for example, who didn't want to break off ties with him, to me, that's the core of this story. The victims and the people who really stuck by him. Honestly, Jeffries, if there was a donation and there's nothing attached to it, there's no like, oh, and then he did this favor for Jeffrey Epstein. I just think you have to go case by case, honestly. And I do think that you have to be a little bit cautious about, you know, we're known by the company we keep. So yes, if you were hanging out in that circle, that's a problem for you. It's an ethical problem for you. I'm not sure it's a criminal problem for you.
So the thing is, I would agree with you if it wasn't just one side in Tom Massey who said, I need all these papers out. Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to get a lot of other people in there. We don't want to re-victimize. Well, no, I want it all out. What are you hiding? Okay. You get it all out. Let's go. And then you have this other woman, Plaskett, this delegate from the Virgin Islands, getting text messages in real time while texting Michael Cohen. Okay, wow, that's a relationship. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that has anything to do with Donald Trump. Oh, a birthday card? That's the same birthday card to Bill Clinton. And Bill Clinton was on the plane more than anybody else. There's a painting of Bill Clinton at the Jeffrey Epstein's house in Epstein Island. So if you want this fight, if you had one party going, can focus on the victims, move on, he's dead, and the other one going, how dare you, what are you hiding? And while they go try to find out and they'll answer the question, what are you hiding, they're finding all these other things. And I think you're going to see a ton about Gates. If anything, this guy was with him every step of the way, talked to his ex-wife. So you're going to see so many people who were invited to parties that I was never invited to, and perhaps you weren't either, in the Hamptons and flying around the world together, the rich, the famous, hanging out with the investors in order to help each other pal around with each other.
This is, it's an investigation that must, we need to know more, because unfortunately they didn't do their job in Florida on the first round of this and shut him down. And after those revelations came out about Ghislaine Maxwell chatting with, I forget how old they were. I think they were in middle school girls in poor neighborhoods in Florida near the house. Would you like to come over and get $200 to give a massage? I'm interested in the criminal through line of this story. Who committed crimes against these girls? Okay. Ghislaine Maxwell has already been convicted.
In jail.
She is in jail, okay? Jeffrey Epstein, by all accounts, took the easy way out in his situation. He did not want to go through this process. He couldn't stand the humiliation of what was about to come out. But I'm just saying again, it's a legal process. Politically, if you're tainted by this because you hung around him and you went on the plane, well, then you got to take the political ramifications of that as well.
But to see Tom Massey and Ro Khanna say, I got to do this for the victims, when they couldn't care less about the victims.
Absolute.
4 years before.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what I have no time for this.
So long ago, and the judicial side of the equation dropped the ball so dramatically while he was alive. Okay.
How he had jail on weekends.
Exactly. No, he got such a sweetheart deal in Florida. That is when this whole thing should have come spilling out in full color, and people should have paid the piper. In terms of going to, being tried, being convicted, having their moment in court. So now it's like it is a distraction in some ways. It's politically being used as a political tool in other ways. We just got to keep our head on straight when you look at this story. And, either, like I said, there's either criminal issues that will be brought up, or there are you're known by the company you keep issues. Right. And those are going to be politically difficult for either titans of corporations or politicians.
But haven't we seen this movie before? The whole run up before the election on Russia. And then when the president for 2.5 years,
yes.
Russia. And then Ukraine, a severe reaction. We have to impeach the president on Ukraine. And then the president, not without blame, but January 6th. Goes on for another 2 years after that. And then he runs for office, gets convicted. So we're trying to find out what Trump's about and how he would run. But instead, he's dealing with the Russia hoax,
absolutely.
Personal transgressions, impeachment, January 6th. So the president finally says, okay, judge me on the economy.
I know.
Judge me on the military.
Right.
And he's got, wait a second.
No, there's no indication that
you're
the president,
doing it again.
That there's anything on the president here.
But if you look
and
at the other
years
channels,
and years of, opposition research from other campaigns, from the Biden campaign, I find it really hard to believe that if there was anything egregious that pointed towards President Trump, we wouldn't have heard it by now. If that's the case, then they did a lousy job. But I just can't imagine at this point that there is more to come out. And I don't think that, the birthday book is honestly, I don't think it's not proof of anything other than who doesn't send people, I don't know. It's
right.
It's a body, whatever. But, that's why I'm saying criminal behavior is this investigation. And in terms of what people like Larry Summers, you know, why was he still sending these emails long after finally the dam broke open and the Miami Herald reported stuff we had never seen before?
So I want to talk about Thomas Crooks and what Miranda Devine was able to find out about the digital footprint. Also understand that this current FBI feels as though a lot of the conspiracy theories are fairy tales that are coming out. However, we did not know the detail of his social media footprint. Here's Senator Josh Hawley now about what we learned from Christopher Wray and his deputy, Abbott, and what was really the facts. Cut 30.
What we're learning bit by bit is really disturbing. I have to tell you, it contradicts what Biden's FBI told Congress under oath. Biden did, the deputy director, up to say, you know, he didn't have much of an online footprint, Crooks didn't, and what little he did was all right wing. That turns out not to be true. He had a much bigger footprint than they told us. It turns out it wasn't just right wing. It wasn't right wing at all. It was crazy leftist. It involves this trans furry stuff. It's weird. There's more of it, I'm sure. We should see all of it, Jesse. So let's make it all public.
So your thoughts. I haven't even heard you talk about this yet.
Yeah. Well, I've always felt that there's more to this story. I had Eric Trump on yesterday and we got his reaction to all of this. Obviously, you know, he's angry. He wants to know all of the details. He did not cast any doubt on the current FBI. He feels that they're, you know, he specifically brought up Dan Bongino and Kash Patel and said that he thinks that they've, you know, done a good job with what they have on this. But to me, again, it goes back to the original investigation. It also goes back to extraordinary laziness on the part of reporters and journalists. Like, this is just coming out now. And why are we learning? Why couldn't we dig into the social media of this young man? It was preposterous from the very beginning that any young man in his 20s, we were told initially he was not online at all. Accounts were taken down almost immediately.
He's on Discord, of all things.
It was all gone. It was all swept away. This story should have been front and center. Obviously, we're in the middle of a presidential election. There was another assassination attempt just a month later or so in Florida. I have always felt that there was something really fishy and really unexplored in this story in terms of who this kid was. You know, you look at those videos now of him pointing the gun in his room. He tagged FBI agents, high-level FBI agents, and used names in his posts. What is the FBI doing if they're not scanning what is out there that's problematic? Why wouldn't the social media companies say, oh, gee, FBI, you might want to just take a look at this person. They say they're interested in terrorism and assassinating political officials. Maybe you better take a look at him. That's a very blatant. There's no gray there.
Two things. Do you remember the Boston bombers? The FBI was on top of them.
Yes.
And did question them. And they become bombers and killers. So there's two things. If the FBI missed them, I'm disturbed. And if the FBI got them and thought they were okay, I'm disturbed. In this case, according to today's FBI, the previous FBI was not on top of this guy. So it's not like that. There's nobody that interviewed him. Nobody was looking at him. No one alerted at the time. I'm worried about this. And management said, keep it down. So I don't know what they're doing, but you know what they were focusing on. All about January 6th. We got to go raid Mar-a-Lago. We got to get
Absolutely.
Something on Trump. You know, we got to go help Jack Smith.
Absolutely. I mean, look at what they were focused on. And you got to look at Merrick Garland as well, who signed off on that raid at Mar-a-Lago, right? Where was he on, you know, overseeing these sorts of threats? I mean, obviously he's at the Justice Department, but this, you know, you should not be able to go online and talk about assassinating political officials, terrorism, you know, the rest of his weird, perverse stuff, you know, is separate from this, although it does fill in some of the questions around him when you look at the big change in his behavior right away. But this is obviously should have been someone who tripped wires and who was of concern. And it was just nothing afterwards. We don't know anything about him. Lone gunman, nuff said, put a bow on it. We're done with this investigation.
I expect there's going to be, the FBI leadership is going to do an interview this week. And there was a huge pushback about what a podcaster did over the weekend about the investigation. The word was fairy tale. Take disparate facts, tie them together in what you think was the story, and then make it the story. And they're outraged, because he'd expect different from many of which are right-wing podcasters. And I've had long conversations with them, and they said, let's not use my name, but we're going to be talking this week. And of course, I volunteered you. but I think we're going to get some answers, but I at least get some follow through. The one thing I would say is that I did ask, is any of this inaccurate? Is any, like, are we putting social media staples on something he didn't say? And he said, none of it's inaccurate. So I said, okay, back in a moment.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we are back. A few more minutes with Martha McCallum. Martha, today, the Saudi MBS is here. And obviously, I've never seen the president happier to have a world leader in his midst. He wasn't that happy with Zelensky. I don't know if you noticed. But with MBS here, and I think we're in a situation where both countries really want to help each other. Am I being naive?
No, I think that President Trump recognizes that in order to have a prosperous future in the Middle East, which he clearly sees as the best way to settle things down in the Middle East, this is also a continuing effort to isolate Iran. Okay, so you see the Israeli operation with U.S. help, the B-2 bombers that took out the majority of the nuclear program, the nuclear weapons program in Iran. And now you see, like, if you're Iran and you're watching this, you're like, okay, so now the Saudis have F-35s. They will soon. Israel has F-35s. Israel and Saudi have more in common in many ways than they share more interests than they share differences. They both want to be sort of a tech center, prosperous area of the Middle East. All of that drives out the completely economically backward Iran and isolates them. So I think the president recognizes that, you know, the important thing is to have a strong relationship with Saudi Arabia. And he clearly likes MBS. And he thinks it's a win-win. $1 trillion investment into the United States. So yes, he, you know, overlooks a few things perhaps in the interest of the country, I think, is where he's coming from.
See, what do you think about this? The big difference is, I'm saying to myself, am I just glad that Saudi Arabia is not an enemy, an oil producer that we might have a relationship with that would control the price of oil and ultimately our economy? But I think that's different about MBS is that he is not looking to gain himself power. He's got it. He's not looking to get a bigger moat and a bigger fence to surround the royal family. He's saying, let's get sports. Let's balance these people's lives out. Let's build entrepreneurship. Let's build up our universities. Let's tamp down in the extreme religious aspect of it. I don't even know if he goes to Mecca. If you do see the profiles on him, I just read a book on him. This guy is very, you know, he's as very secular as any Muslim leader. But his inkling is to grow the economy, not his personal wealth, because he knows he's got wealth beyond imagination. So that's why I'm hopeful. Because he knows he can't turn around and say women and men are equal. It's 1919 there, right? People thought probably we're crazy.
Well, the advances that women have seen in Saudi Arabia in the past 6 years are enormous. Absolutely.
So that's why I'm hopeful. And since there's such a powerhouse that could spread throughout. And they were most of the hijackers were Saudi, famously. Bin Laden, Saudi, famously. But if you could change the curriculum there and have a generation grow up without thinking that Christians, Jews, and everybody else doesn't need to be killed. That would be an improvement from the Wahhabism that was being jammed down their throat. So how could we not support that?
I agree. And when you go back in history, you know, the first President Bush had a good relationship with the Saudi leadership.
Reagan
had a good relationship. So, you know, obviously 9/11 is a very dark chapter. It was the outgrowth of radical Islamist fervor, which we saw in the ISIS caliphate. We saw it in every ugly way that it could possibly exist, in the death of Americans, in the death of people who were in cages on beaches. All of that is an ugly, radical Islam. But it is interesting to me, and I think this is why President Trump and MBS get along so well. They are basically both interested in economic power that becomes more powerful than weapons or wars.
It is. And the thing is, they know AI is going to be the future. How can I help you? Well, you got the technology. Well, what do you need? I need the energy. Well, I'm going to give you $1 trillion. In turn, can I get an F-35 to do what? To be able to protect myself. It's not against Israel. Now, the only fear is if he's overthrown, a radical regime takes place and they got our stuff.
Right.
But that seems increasingly unlikely. And in life, you have to take gambles. One of the biggest was recognizing the Syrian president and saying, hey, you got a terrible past, but we have to be better than Assad.
I mean, go back through history, you know, and look at the people that we have felt were better on our side than against us. And these are the calculations of realpolitik that leaders make. They look at the global situation and say, what is the best alliance? No alliance is perfect. You're going to have times when you are, you know, sort of in bed with people that maybe you wouldn't have wanted to be in relationships with in the past. But you got to say, what's the best lineup for the United States? Is it better for Saudi Arabia to ally with China or with us?
Real politics or fantasy or a wish politics. 3 p.m. today, Martha McKellum, The Story. And don't forget What Made America Great on Fox Nation.